This episode of I Seem Fun is brought to you by our friends at Casper Mattress. I'm in bed. I am on my Casper Mattress. Now, I'm telling you, I wouldn't lie. Why would I sleep on something I hate? I kept my old one just in case I didn't like it. And then I gave my old one away. Casper, now listen. Yeah, they sent me a free mattress. But I'm not some lobbyist taking bribes. I was trying it out. I said, if I like it, I will advertise it. And I love it. And I will even say, it's one of those mattresses that if you have someone else in your bed and they get on the bed, you're not all bouncing around like you're on a ship. Jennifer, why? Who's in your bed? No one's in it currently, but I've had an experience where I was not the only one in here, and it was great. I felt like the mattress could support two people. So get yourself one. Now, here's the deal with Casper Mattresses. They're an online retailer. That's why their premium mattresses are less expensive than going into a showroom. All you're paying for in those showrooms are high markups. Even when they have a sale, that still should just be the normal price. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms. They just pass the savings directly to the consumer. You order it online. It's very easy. And here's the thing. A mattress is usually about $1,500 or more, especially if you do the Tempur-Pedic and blah, blah, blah. Casper mattresses cost about $500 for a twin-size mattress, $600 for twin extra large, $750 for full-sized, $850 for queen, and $950 for king. Even a king-size bed is under $1,000. And it's a big, huge, thick mattress. You can do a box spring under it if that's your thing. But if you're one of those just, I only want a mattress people, it's totally, totally big. It's completely risk-free because their delivery is free. You can return it within a 100-day period. That's 3 months, over 3 months. Literally, if you go to a showroom, you're not going to get to lay on a bed for 3 months unless you do an elaborate ruse where you break in and sleep in the closet and then, or hide in the closet until it's time to go to bed at night. Casper has turned the buying process into a risk-free experience. They understand, obviously, they're a mattress business. They understand the importance of truly trying out a mattress that in all reality, you spend a third of your life on. It's obsessively engineered. It has just the right sink, just the right bounce. I did address this. The two technologies responsible for that are latex foam and memory foam. Now, I would even say to Casper, when you say latex and memory foam, which it is, I got the impression when I would hear these ads before I had the bed of my own, this is from experience, I thought, oh, well, it's a thin little thing. It's not. It's a big, thick, bring your kids and jump on it mattress. They're made in America. Ooh, ooh. And so, obviously. All right. So here's the thing. You're going to get your little holiday bonus soon. Don't buy Christmas presents with it. Enough nonsense. Just get something for yourself. Everyone has to buy a new mattress every few years anyway, right? Maybe you're moving in with someone. It's time to get a grown-up mattress. Enough of the futon. This is how to do it. And then you don't have to go anywhere. They deliver it to your door. It's Casper.com, C-A-S-P-E-R.com. Now, if you go to I Seem Fun, Casper.com/I Seem Fun, all lowercase, all together. You can get a special deal. If you use the code I Seem Fun, some terms and conditions apply, but you get $50 towards any mattress. That's it. Now, I think that's it. I think I've said everything I need to say. I have one. I love it. And I have back problems. I go to a chiropractor and all that has not caused me any problems at all. I love my mattress. It's so nice not to have springs up in here. Okay. That was a long story just to tell you that today's episode is brought to you by Casper.
I see the fun. I see the fun. The diary of Jack Kirkman Podcast.
Oh my God, she's back. She's back. Burn it up. Let's burn up the night, baby. Let's do it together. This is Cool in the Gang. The song is called... It's called Big Fun. The word is out. It's all over town. Your work is done. Time for some fun. Let's get it on. The feeling is right. Come on, baby. Let's do it tonight. I said, have some fun.
Oh, yeah. Have some fun.
I shouldn't be singing. You guys, this has been one of my favorite songs since I was a kid. Because there's a part of me that has terrible taste in music. But I love Cool in the Gang. And Big Fun. Big Fun is such an unsung hero. And I heard it in Trader Joe's the other day and I was like, oh my God. I almost pushed a cart into someone to write into my iPhone note section. Download Big Fun. I'm embarrassed I didn't have it already. I want everyone to download Big Fun. But you're only allowed to listen to it at home when you're like doing laundry. You can never have fun to the song. You can only listen to it for like non-fun fun. Okay, that's enough before they sue me. What you gonna do? Burn it up. Let's burn up the night, baby. Okay. Don't sing. Don't sing. Oh my God, you guys. My arm is numb. I Seem Fun, episode 109, talking with an open throat. Thank you, you guys, for tolerating my big breaks. Producer Mike sent me an email last week when I said, I think I'm going to get one up. He said, you know, a lot of people take hiatus and I love your voice. I think he meant what I have to say in society. And I want it to be good. I want it to be better. Not like I want your voice quality to sound better. Maybe that is what he meant. I thought he meant your voice is one I like to hear and I want it to not get fucked up. Just take all the time you need. So blame Mike. I won't give you his contact info, but blame him in your heart. No, I couldn't do a new episode last week because I had 4 tour dates. And I had to keep all other talking to a minimum. But I have so much to talk to you guys about. I am going to record another episode this week for next week. Great story, Jen. I'm going home for Halloween. Changing it up this year in the when to visit my family plans. Because my Thanksgiving got a little funked and funkied. And I miss my family. I thought, I usually go see them every July as well. I didn't go this year. I was on tour. Went to see all you guys. Saw my mom and dad for 1 second when I was home in Cambridge. Not home, but performing in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And so I thought, you know what? It's 95 degrees every day now in Los Angeles. We don't have seasons anymore. I would like to be somewhere fallish for Halloween time. And no trick-or-treaters come to my door and it depresses me. Now, I'm going to go stay with my sister. She says she doesn't get any either, but that's fine. She lives like on a farm in the woods, so no one should be coming. But I remember last year, and you guys were there for me, when my building manager said, put a little orange ribbon on your door if you're willing to give out candy. And there's kids in this building. I fucking hear them. And these mofos, how easy is it? You don't have to go outside. Bring your kid around the building. I had like, you know those things you buy at CVS, like the skeleton that's coming out of the bars at you. I had things like that, like in the hall. I do it. I love Halloween. I, for some odd reason, love kids coming to the door and giving them candy. I don't know why. I don't even believe in candy. Sugar's terrible. Most of it's made with gelatin, which is pig hooves. Pig and horse crap. But you know what? I like to give out that candy. Anyway, so I never like to pretend I give a shit about the costumes, though. Oh, you're scary. No, you're not. You're 2 feet tall. I hate lying to children. I think that is such a good reason I'm not a mother, because I would fuck my kid up by being like, you know you're not scary, right? You know that people just have to open the door and give you candy? Like, you know that you didn't impress anyone with that costume. People think you're cute in a condescending way. You are not scary with that Darth Vader mask on. Why would I need to tell the kid that? Because you know why? Because I couldn't sit there looking at my kid going, ooh, scary. And then having the kid think, yeah, I just scared my mom. You didn't. I'm in charge, kid. You're not scaring me. You want to scare me? I don't know. Show me the bills. Come on. Who's with me? Okay. So as you can hear, I shouldn't do that. Don't pinch. My voice is a lot better. 45% improvement at the doctor's. Now, I got to say, I got a couple complaints here for the I Seem Funners. Oh, so my point is I'm going to record up Keeping Up with the Kirkmans episode because my mom went to see Ringo Starr. Oh, my God. I called her. I said, I can't talk on the phone, you know, vocal recovery. But please give me your review of Ringo Starr because I cannot wait. But I will be making you repeat it because I need to record it for my podcast. Jennifer, he's wonderful. He is peace and love. I have to tell my mom. I have to play her the YouTube video where he's like, with peace and love, stop sending me things. Because I think he's a very angry dude. And I think the peace and love is like an angry thing. Like I'm trying not to explode, so I say peace and love. I could be wrong. But you know, like that secretly angry yoga teacher that's just about to burst. So, but she loved it. Santana was there. He played. They played a Robert Plant song. Todd Rundgren was playing with them. He threw his guitar up and down. And I just, I loved it. My dad's in the background screaming, I don't like that. Ronnie, I can't hear when you... Your father's talking to me. Ronnie, be quiet. What, Jennifer? What? I'm like, I didn't say anything. I always forget every interview I'm asked, who are your influences? I don't fucking know. But if it wasn't for Howard Stern imitating his parents, I bet that's where I got that from. Because I started listening to Stern like a couple of years before I started doing stand-up, and it just came so naturally to talk about my family. Anyway, But yes, yeah, so my dad gets on the phone. He's like, I don't like this music. What was that music they played? Rock. I go, rock and roll. He goes, no. Be quiet, Joanne. I don't know what my parents, they love to talk to each other when they're on the phone. I go, heavy metal? He goes, yeah. I go, Dad, Ringo Starr isn't heavy metal. I go, you saw Marilyn Manson. Did you like that better? Yeah, I think I did. All right. I don't understand anything that's happening. Parents found out I got a tattoo. I mean, I guess I did put it on Instagram, but I took it down so they wouldn't see it, but I guess they saw it. Nothing gets by them. My dad's like, those don't come off, you know. I love that he thought I might not have that information. My mom goes, where did you get it? Where, let me guess, on your bum. I go, no. I'm not going to get a tramp stamp. What color is it? I go, it's small. It's black. It's like typewriter font. It says JKL. Oh, I didn't even tell you guys. I did it. I finally did it. I really didn't think I was going to tell you because I thought my parents didn't know. And I knew they would overreact. But see, the thing is, if my dad overreacts, then my mom wants to be the cool one, so she won't. so I only have to get it from one parent. And then I went, excuse me, I'm 41. I'll just hang up the damn phone. Tell me not to get a tattoo. My dad goes, I'm not going to look at it. I go, I don't care. My mom, you know, Jen, why did you do it? I said, I don't know. I just thought it would be something fun to put on my body. And I thought, I've been half my life not a tattoo person. How fun for the second half of my life to have one. I do look down at it and go, that's kind of cool. Like it's kind of cool to have a tattoo. Like not everyone does it. Not everyone wants to. Not everyone can stand the pain. And I don't know, it was just something fun to do. And, you know, I thought it was going to take a long time. It took 10 minutes. I was like, okay, well, that's 10 minutes that distract me from life's responsibilities. What else can we do? And then, but my mom was like, I always thought, now I'm too old to get one, but if I did it again, I would get a little butterfly on my ankle, just where you have yours. And I go, well, there you go. Yeah, I think it's great. You know, your father, he's just, he doesn't understand anything. Anyway, so I will be podcasting with them. You know, we'll talk more. But yeah, so I got my tattoo. So, all right. So here's my complaint with you I Seem Funners. Not all of you, but some of you are in trouble. Listen, if you listen to the show, you know the last four episodes have been about my damn voice and how I read that letter. I can't even hang out with friends. I can't tour. I can't this without, you know, that. Great explanation. And I'm getting people like on Instagram, on Facebook, like, why aren't you podcasting? I'm like, what the fuck I told you? Because I've got vocal nodules. I got to lay off the talking. And then someone wrote, well, you sounded fine last time. I'm like, yeah, because I only talked for half an hour and I was in silence for a week before that. And I steamed and I did vocal warm-ups. But I couldn't do it last week because I was on tour. It's like, well, I thought you might be feeling better. I'm like, no, as I explained, it's an injury ongoing. Have to change my life for the next year. I thought you were just sick. That's what he said. I'm like, what? Who, when they're sick, has to do vocal warm-ups because of it? What? No, people. Nodules on my vocal cords. Not a virus, not a cold. Injury from talking too much. Like blisters on the foot from running. Okay. So whenever I would get a comment like, why aren't you podcasting? It would be like going to someone's house if they have a broken leg and yelling over them. Why aren't you going running? It hurts, you guys. It was really bothering me. I was like, everyone's so stupid with these questions. I thought my podcast listeners were supposed to be a cut above the average ding dong. I thought in this community, I didn't have to get asked such dumb questions. You've all let me down. It's like the classroom. When one person misbehaves, you all put your head down. You guys have to police yourselves out there. I can't be having these random stray comments come at me that sound like a dingbat from Dingy Doo. See, did you hear that rasp at the end? Doo. Where I used to think that was phlegm, that is air. 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 Oh my God. So my vocal coach, Robert, I have a different, now I talked about my vocal coach, this woman on the live episode. And then I had an appointment with her. And then when I got there, they switched me to this dude who I'd seen before, but I was like, did she hear the podcast? Is she offended? And she was like, Robert, you deal with that ungrateful bitch. But now Robert was like, now, so I'd go every week. And he has a microphone there, which we use to record the voice. So sometimes I'll do testing, I'll read a paragraph, and it goes through some little machine in the computer and it tracks something. But he was like, what if you did, just show me some of your act so I can see how you breathe and perform on stage. And I was like, oh, I can't do my act in an office by myself for someone. It's never going to happen. He's like, well, just talk the way you would if you were on stage. I was like, well, that I can do. So I picked up the mic and it wasn't on or anything, but I was just holding it to get in the feeling of it. And I started walking around and projecting and I just said, oh, I got a great parking space today I go to Cedars-Sinai Hospital for this, and I go, but it turns out I was handicapped. So that's why it was not, I should have known. So I'm just talking about what happened that morning. That is a thing that happened. And he's doing that like fake laughing. And I'm like, oh, he thinks this is my act. And he goes, and I had to stop. I go, this isn't my act. You know, he goes, oh, it's not. I go, no. Remember I said I wouldn't do my act. I'll just make up something. I go, but I'm talking in the style and volume that I would on stage. And he's like, oh, okay. So I'm like, how unfunny does he must think I am? So he's like, well, I really need to get a sense of your breathing. He goes, can I watch your stuff anywhere? I go, well, I was proud to say I have a Netflix special. So I'm like, yeah, I have a special on Netflix. And then I have to be like, I'm going to die alone. Yeah, no, alone. Yeah. And I feel fine. Yeah. So I'm going to die. Yeah. So, you know, say an awkward thing out of context to your vocal coach. And then, so I see him this week and he's like, I watch your special. He's like, yeah. Now I know he could be talking about the flagrant vocal abuse in my special that I knew was happening at the time. But he was like, yes. So I knew he was like struggling and didn't think it was funny. And I was like, well, if it makes you feel any better, I know what I did wrong since then with the voice and stuff. And he's like, oh, okay, good. And then he's like, well, then, you know, I don't normally watch comedy specials, but then I watched Amy Schumer's special and she's got a way of speaking that's really good for not losing your voice. So I don't know if that's something you can do. And I was like, no, I cannot just go have Amy Schumer's cadence and delivery. But thanks for the hot tip of how to rip off another comedian. Like, I am who I am. You know, I don't always have to be, you know, yelling on stage, and I certainly don't, but I will always play with volume. Play with volume. Yeah, I like to take the space and just, you know, it really is play up there. It really is. Anyway, so I was like, gee, is there anywhere I can go to not feel like shit about my career? But the answer is no. So, but I did have a great week on tour, Columbus, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. Oh my God. Every show was nearly sold out. I think one of them was 100%. The rest were like shy of 10 seats. Let me know when you book it. Sorry, texting my friend Chris. Okay, so what was I saying? Oh yeah, great shows. And all my opening acts were like, your audience is the best fucking audience in the world. Okay, hang on. So you're nothing. Okay, so, and I was like, I know. This is true. Because I went and did a set in Vegas, and for, I guess there were some I Seem Funners there. I'm sorry that set was so unfunny. I tried to just do like big hits and stuff like that. Big hits. I tried to do like, you know, stuff that I've done before in my Netflix special, stuff I know gets laughs. And it was still like pulling teeth in Vegas. It was like just, sometimes Vegas is not good for me, but I felt so unfunny. So for the people in Vegas, I apologize. But yeah, so Cleveland, Columbus, Pittsburgh, fucking amazing people. And you just make me feel so free up there to experiment around with stuff. I really like where my material is going. It's so different than at the start of my tour and blah, blah, blah. And so, thank you. I don't know who's out there. Like, I don't know who these audiences are or how they know me, if it's from Netflix or Chelsea or at midnight. I'm assuming it's a mishmash of everything, but I've really got it narrowed down to a good fucking group. I mean, I know there's more of you out there. I'd like, you know, thousands more, but it's a good group. Anyway, great times. performing. But the last minute ticket buying, you guys are, I almost canceled shows. I was like, it would literally be like I sold 50 tickets in advance to a 320-seat theater in Pittsburgh. And I'm like, am I really going to show up and lose money on this? And then I get there and they're like, oh, we're sold out. I'm like, what? And they're like, yeah, everyone bought them today. I'm like, 300 people bought tickets today. What the fuck, you guys? And ticket prices are cheaper in advance, usually. A few bucks cheaper. I guess if there's a service charge, it evens out. But guys, I guess if it's a money thing, then, you know, rock on. Thanks for even spending any of it on me. But if it's not, if it's just like, a, oh, no, no, come on. Got to buy in advance. Let's do that for 2016. So, yes, I am booking my book tour. So a lot has gone on this week. I'll tell you about it. Oh, and I'll tell you about getting my tattoo. So, actually, there's really no story there. I'll just probably end up talking about it when I'm with my parents because there's seriously no story. It's like I went, I had a gift certificate. I'd been given a tattoo as a birthday gift. And then I went and got it. And that was it. It was, you know, people who have huge tattoos, like sleeves or big ones on their leg or something, they're all like, oh, it doesn't really hurt. It feels like a cat scratching you. But that's for people who have a lot to fill in. Like the fill in, the coloring process feels like a cat scratch. But the kind I got, which is just three block letters, doesn't feel like a cat scratch. Feels like someone's stabbing you with a needle. I mean, it's intense. You have to think about not moving also while it's happening. And I was doing that kind of pregnancy breathing, like that I see in TV shows when people are having a baby. That has to be the worst thing for an actor to have to do is pretend to be in labor. It's like it's been done so many fucking times in a serious role, in a comedic role. Everyone's done the and it looks like you're just imitating other pregnant people you've seen. It looks like you're just imitating other actors you've seen play someone pregnant, which some lazy assholes probably are. I would be like, I need to spend a month in a maternity ward watching all different kinds of women give birth. And then I will, you know, put my character together from there. And then they'll cut that scene anyway. It won't matter. Anyway, so, ow. Just reheating some water. So, planning my book tour. All right, let me talk about my next book. I'm so excited that my range is back. But I can feel, my throat hurting almost like a strained muscle. Like, it just feels like a little lump in my throat when I talk too much. So I'm going to have to do my exercises, my cool downs when I'm done talking here. But, oh, what was I saying? Pregnancy. Yeah. Oh, my book. So my book is officially available for pre-order. It's the longest title, so strap in. It's called I Know What I'm Doing and Other Lies I Tell Myself. And then there's a stamp that's like, shunk, you know, it says Dispatches from a Life Under Construction. And I'm wearing caution tape, like a construction site, like I am under construction. Caution, don't come near me in this state. I can only do you harm, right? So people were asking, what's that yellow stuff on the cover? Like, shut up. So you can pre-order it. And now here's the deal with pre-order. Here's the deal with everything. People always ask me this. I get an advance from the publishing company to write the book. It's paid out slowly over the course of writing the book. You get one third of it when you sign on. The next third of it you get after you hand in your first completed draft, and then you get the rest of it when the book comes out. Now, the advance is nice, and the last advance I had was actually bigger, and I don't believe my book made profits above the advance. So I got a lower one this time. This is how crazy the book industry is. even though I hit the bestseller list, I didn't outmake my advance. So they gave me a lower advance for the second one. If I outsell that, I will start making profits, but it is, it's so nickel and diming at that point. It doesn't matter. It's either going to be a runaway hit or it's going to be what I think, which is just another great thing to have out there. And I got my advance and that's the money I expect to make. There is no secret way to buy it that helps me more. My money has been given to me. So whether you Kindle it or buy the hardcover version or buy it from this vendor as opposed to that one, it doesn't matter. As long as you buy it, that's great. Now, if you buy it now or the first week, that really helps my chances of getting on the New York Times bestseller list for the first week. Pre-orders count. I don't know if I should give away that industry secret, but that's why I love a pre-order. And my publishing company can see all the people that are pre-ordering. So if tons of people pre-order, then they're not as stressed as we lead up to the book coming out. And I have to do less ridiculous things, right? Like call all your best friends and tell them you have a book and tell them to tweet about it. Like if they've got like major pre-order numbers, like thousands and thousands, they'll be like, this is awesome. So you're kind of sending them a message. And then that helps me have to do less ridiculous things in the lead up to the book coming out. Because you know how it is. People have ideas about what will sell the book. Make a viral video. Yeah, how am I going to... I don't know if it's going to go viral. So, you know, ask your famous friends for favors. Like, ah, fuck. So if I don't want to have to do all that shit. The pre-order, you're really doing me a fucking solid with that pre-order business. And they don't charge you until it ships. So, and it won't ship until April 12th, 2016. So I'm just saying. So you can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, BAM, IndieBound, Kobo, K-O-B-O, Kindle, or iBooks. My book is available for pre-order on all of those. And, I would love you forever if you would do it. So, and I think you'll like it. I put a lot of myself into this book and it's about 50 million different topics. Yeah. Okay. So there's that. What was my point? Oh, so I'm booking my book tour right now. Now, my book tour is going to be a little different because you've seen my Netflix special. Most of you have seen my new stuff. What do I have left? Can't write two new hours in a year. My book tour is going to be like a proper book tour. Like I will tell stories that are related to the topic. I Know What I'm Doing and Other Lies I Tell Myself. Some are old stories from childhood. Some are things I used to tell like in one-woman shows I did around LA that no one really ever saw, and some will be new, but it'll be like, you know, stories. Yeah, I said that. And then I'll read a little bit from the book and then I'll do a Q&A. And so I'm hoping that would be enjoyable for people. And then obviously a meet and greet after, get your book signed. I'll take a picture. So it'll be like little book events in every city. Hopefully the local bookstores will comply and they'll come out and they'll sell the books. We'll do a little theater in every city that I go to. Now, not every city is going to get a visit, and I'm sorry. And this is where I do have to stereotype. You know, every city I go to, I always have idiots in my life. Like even, you know, my chiropractor once was like, I bet your stuff doesn't play in a lot of places in America. I'm like, no, it plays everywhere, you fuck. Don't tell me where my stuff... How would I do it for a living then if it didn't play? Like, I'm so outrageous that, like, someone in Fort Wayne wouldn't understand jokes about divorce. Like, shut up. It's amazing, you guys, what people in LA and New York think of the rest of the country. So, but anyway, but I do have to stereotype a bit here because doing a more story show with, you know, maybe read a serious chapter, do a Q&A. You know, I was going to fly with drunk people in you know, Raleigh, North Carolina. So I'm not coming everywhere. It'll be the major, you know, pinkies up cities. Sorry, you guys. Sorry. It's just, I don't want to lose money. So, and I don't mean lose money, like not make as much. I mean, literally we'll like spend money instead of earn it. And I have to do this for a living. So, but I'll come back as a stand-up in some capacity to everywhere that I went this year. So, all right, I've got kind of a scandalous story. My whole life has been in flux for the past month, just in a flux of ducks. And, I'm going to keep some of my personal stuff to myself. Like, you know, my special man friend was here. He is back in his home origin country, and we'll see what happens. I mean, it's honestly just, there's distance, there's time, there's travel, there's our schedules, and it's, who knows? But in the most best of ways, who knows? Who knows, and hoping for the best, right? But, you know, so that's had to change a little bit. And then but what I was told, so I had this whole grand plan for my life. You know, I was going to, I had some plans for myself this year, and I was going to do this and do that. And maybe I was going to travel in December, and I was going to go to Italy in November, and I was going to, you know, whatever. So I find out this TV network, I'd had lunch with them in May or June. And they were like, look, we want a show on the air during this certain time of year in 2016. And we want you to host it. Or they didn't say we want you to host it, but they were like, it was clear I was in talks. And I go, okay, great. Now, the bottom line is there is no show. Everything just fell through this week, but I'm going to take you through the process of the agita I've had. Now, I don't even think I'm supposed to be talking about this, but I figure if I don't say what network it is, who fucking cares, right? And it's my story to tell. This is what this podcast is for. This is all I fucking have left. So, you know, everything's going well. I'm like, all right, you know, that's interesting. But my mind was elsewhere. It's like, I'm on tour right now, whatever. So a few days later, they're like, yeah, about that TV show we want you to host. If you could write a few monologues and then audition on tape. And I'm like, what? Like, if you guys don't know, I don't know how to compare it to your jobs because I don't know your jobs. But I always think it's good to compare things to dating. Let's say you went on a date. Let's say you're... All right, this isn't a realistic situation, but let's say you're at dinner with a guy. This is very a very heteronormative example, but you're at dinner with a guy and he's like, I think I'm going to get ready to propose to you. And you're like, wow. And then 3 days later, he's like, do you want to go just go on a first date and see how we like it? And you're like, wait, how did we go from marriage to now we kicked it back to first date? So auditioning on tape is like a cattle call. Like, wait, we had dinner with the president of the network. Like, now I have to put something on tape? Like, okay. And so I wrote these monologues. It was a pain in the ass because I was in Denver, Colorado that weekend, and I was trying to work on my new material. And so I was multitasking and I was just getting cranky, you know? And I was like saying to my manager, like, I hate that I have to do this. Like, something's wrong here, you know? So I went in and performed the monologues, and the casting woman was like, I don't know why they don't just give this to you. I was like, I don't fucking know either. Like, and I don't mean to be ungrateful. It's just that it's a smaller network. I feel like I have more Twitter followers and they have viewers. Like, just give me the damn show. You know, I'm a fucking seasoned professional, like enough nonsense. So then months and months go by. I don't hear anything. And I'm like, oh, whatever. I'm on tour. And then in September, no, I'm sorry. So then the day before my birthday, I'm about to go out of town on vacation. And my manager calls me and goes, those network guys came by the office and just told me that you have the show. I go, what? And she goes, yeah, they auditioned over 100 people over the summer and they came back to you. Now I find out they auditioned like 100 young women, like women in their 20s. I'm like, oh, it is like dating. Like a guy gets scared. You go on a date in LA. You're in your 40s. A guy gets scared. He goes out with 120 somethings and he's like, I think I'll go with Kirkman. And you're like, yeah, I fucking told you you'd be back. But now it was like, okay, you have your own show, go. And I'm like, what? It was just overwhelming. And it was suddenly like, we've got 20 episodes and, you know, your writer's room is going to start the week after Thanksgiving and you can't tour and you can't go anywhere for a year. And I was like, fuck, like it was fucking my life up. Like I was like, wait, what about this potential long distance relationship? What about my book tour? What about? And it was like, everything just got fucked up and changed. And it was just like, oh, and then you had to sit and think like, do I want my own show? Now, of course you do. But it was one of those things where you want it if it's going to be perfect. But I already had this weird topsy-turvy feeling because of the whole, like, should we have someone younger? No, let's go with Jen. I don't know. There was something just like, something wasn't quite right. But they said you have to film this little reel, like a commercial for the show. We're going to show it to the board. And they're going to hopefully give us even more money than we already have for the show. And we're going to make it like a big thing for our network. But don't worry, it is a show. You have 20 episodes. We start soon. All right, great. This isn't like some slouch network. And my management company are producers. They produce like John Oliver's show. Like this is not, we're not dealing with dingbats here. I said dingbats a lot this episode. I don't know why. But we're not dealing with dummies. This is all seasoned professionals. Like, no one has any reason to not believe anybody. I don't believe anyone's lying either, but I just kept being like, it's so odd that you just, okay. And so I had to start adjusting to, well, you know, maybe it is good to not be on the road for a year. I mean, it kind of is. I mean, ultimately, I don't want to be on the road only for the rest of my life in the capacity that I'm on it now. It's too hard. I'd have to be a little more well-known, travel a little better to continue with it as my only income. It's just so much work and it's a lot. So you definitely want that, you know, some TV writing stuff, some TV appearances, you know, keep your union dues, keep your WGA Writers Guild health insurance. Like, you know, I want both. So we filmed the thing and I feel like, does anyone really know what I could tell you what the show was supposed to be about, but I can't because it might give away where it was or just it's, I'm not going to get into the nitty gritty of the type of show it was, but I mean, it wasn't a sitcom or anything. It's not that type of show, but it was like, yeah. So we filmed this thing and it was an all day shoot and like a real professional shoot. And, then the board meeting got canceled and I was like, that's weird. And then it didn't get rescheduled and it didn't get rescheduled and days and weeks are going by. And I'm like, is this happening or not? And I just had a feeling and, you know, I was going to go to Italy after I went to London for my gigs there, the 14th through the 21st at the Soho Theater. But I was like, well, if I'm starting a writer's room the next week, I'll probably be really busy. And that's Thanksgiving week. Like I'll just come back to LA and now it's not happening. And I'm like, fuck, I could have gone to Italy, but I have a non-refundable fancy plane ticket back to LA. I'm like I'm not going to fly first class. Go fuck yourself. So it's not first class. It's the next one down. Cause that's why it's not refundable. Anyway, I'm like, oh, all right. So on and on this goes to where I get the call a few days ago. That's like, yeah, the board doesn't want to invest in it. There's no show. I'm like, what? But I thought there was still the 20 episodes, even without that crazy big budget. No, nothing's happening. I'm like, okay. I didn't even know there was an option. I mean, I know everything's an option, but I had called it like a month ago. I was like, I don't think this is happening. But, you know, they have to go through the paces and all that stuff. But I was like, I mean, I could get further into detail, but I won't. But it was a really stressful month for me, not knowing and going, I don't totally like the way they were dealing with this. So is this even going to be a good experience if it comes to pass? And there's a lot I'm giving up about, like, my own plans and other projects I had. And I was like, God, I'm not, like, loving this. I'm not, like, looking forward to it. And that's a fucked up way to feel about such an opportunity. But at a certain point, it just has to be right. And so anyway, once I found that out, I'm like, get back on the phone, get the book tour rebooked, because I'd had to cancel some stuff. And, you know, let's get all that going. But all those travel plans I had, I was, those can't happen. And some personal trips have to be not happening now because the ticket prices are outrageous. But yeah, I was like, you know, it really did fuck up some stuff in my personal life. So I was like, to think that you can't go anywhere for a year, you know, sometimes you make decisions based on that and you freak out. So I couldn't be happier because I have been wanting this, what I call headspace, for so long. Remember I was talking about that headspace that I wasn't getting on my vacation? It's because I was writing this promo reel and writing a script while I was on vacation. And I was like, I don't even know if I want to do anything. This stuff is just in my lap. I have to do it. And every career move I ever make is like, this just happened in my lap. I have to do it. And so even though it's more of a financial risk, to have the headspace to go, what do I want to create? Let's go for it. And then in the meantime, let's hope some things come in. It's just kind of a fun place to be. Not for too long. Let's not get crazy. Somebody give me something. But so to have that and to be at the point I am in my career where it's not some idiot sitting alone in their apartment, like I have whatever. I don't have to get into it. But agents, managers, people interested in things, like it's not banging down doors to get people to listen. It's just like timing's going to line up. Do I have the right idea for, you know, whatever. But I am writing a script, but I can't get into that either. But with someone I know, we sold an idea to a network and we have to write the script for it. You know, just like a pilot script, just like that other thing I had with the FX network called Jen that people still think is a show and send me resumes for. It was just a script deal, you guys. So, but right now I'm writing a script with someone else for, you know, hopefully they'll make it into a pilot, but please, you know how the shit goes. So, but I am working right now, but, on that. And, so that gives me something to do and something to do where I don't use my voice a lot between now and the end of the year, which is great. But yeah, so that is a crazy, I would dare not to even call it a Hollywood story because these chumps are so, I mean, I found that to be wildly unprofessional, that experience I just had, but I'm like, what a fucking blessing. I could just see the writing on the wall a little bit. Like, I don't know. Probably listening to this and I'm probably getting in trouble. I don't give a shit. Get me in trouble. That's what you liked about me. You liked that I said whatever I wanted. Well, it continues. Okay. Going crazy today on Twitter with my opinions. This Ben Carson asshole with his, I think a woman, if she's raped, should have a baby. Shut the fuck up. Abortion is legal. You want to debate if it's moral, go have a Bible study. But just shut up. Stop running for president on the hatred of women making their own choices about their bodies, especially when one choice they didn't make was to have sex with someone and get impregnated by him. It's so absurd. It's ridiculous. I'm not even talking. It's too dumb of a conversation to have. But I was on Twitter talking about it, and then all these people were like, well, what about guns? I'm like, who's talking about guns? I'm talking about abortions. And someone's like, you. So I wrote, I hope Ben Carson gets raped and impregnated. It's going to take men being able to get pregnant for them to ever empathize. I swear to God. And I've never even had an abortion. Not that I want to meddle for it, but I mean, maybe I can't even get pregnant. Who fucking knows? As far as I know, I've never been pregnant. But it's nice to know that if someone attacks me in an alley, that I don't have to try to carry their child. It's a nice just feeling, you know? But, so, you know, people on Twitter going crazy, you know, men arguing with me. And I'm like, enough nonsense. And someone's like, you lefty liberals, like, oh yeah, just say you hope he gets raped. Like, shut up. I'm so sick of being like, if you're on the right or on the whatever, and you were like typical liberal, like you lost me already. There is no typical liberal. That's, I'm not a Democrat. I think Obama and this people that right wing people that don't like Obama don't tend to generally agree with me. But he is, to me, so right of center that it's ridiculous. Maybe not on every issue, but on some issues that are important to me. So, like, there's some unchecked things in the Constitution. I think he's terrible on the environment. I think the wars, the drones. I mean, enough is a fuck enough. So, but I hate being painted as the left because I know what people think. They go, the left, liberals, Democrats. That's not all the same thing. Trust me, it's not. So I thought, oh, maybe I'll share some embarrassing things about myself. I mean, I'm as liberal as a loon. Don't get me wrong. I wish we were Sweden. I swear to God. But I'll tell you how my mind works. I'm embarrassed to admit, but I voted for Arnold Schwarzenegger once. What? Yes. Here's the deal. When I first moved to LA, I didn't know anything about local anything. The governor was Gray Davis. I didn't know anything about him, who he was, bad or good. I knew nothing. I had just come from New York City. It was just 9/11. That's right. Ooh. 9/11 reference, and it was like 4 months later. And after 2 months of watching the news nonstop and being inundated with crap, I just tuned out politically for a couple months. I didn't really know what the fuck was happening. I get to LA. It's just time to reinvent myself. My roommate is a camera operator, and she's like, there's no fucking work. And it's like she struggled for so long. And she was like, you know, for some reason, I don't remember this. I just remember being at the grocery store, people with petitions, like, recall Gray Davis. Like, I don't know why they were recalling him. But they did somehow. And then you voted. And my roommate was like, again, liberal as a loon like me. But she was like, Schwarzenegger says he's going to bring the movie industry back to California. And I'm like, well, listen, I know the guy's Republican. I don't have a thing against Republicans per se. He's married to a Kennedy and he's a fucking movie star. Like he'll be moderate and it's just governor. It's not president. And if he's going to bring the number one thing in California's economy back to California, because you know, every movie gets made now in Vancouver or TV show, like people losing work. I'm like, fuck yeah. Like let's get the economy going. So I voted for him. Somewhere there's a record of me picking Arnold Schwarzenegger to run my state. I don't believe he brought the movie industry back. I actually remember there was, I don't know if it was a lie or he just doesn't know what he's doing, you know, busy having sex with his maid. I don't know why it didn't work out, but it didn't. I was like, oh, I'm an idiot. That's all right. But, one thing I wish people would stop doing, you see it on Twitter all the time, is the reactionary Trump hate. Now, Donald Trump is a buffoon. He's obviously not he's obviously a backroom country club, cigar chomping, you know, those kind of racist, homophobic, sexist. Of course. Of course. But listen to me. He's not going to be president. He's not. And I think what he's doing is so fucking oddly important. He's not taking campaign contributions. He's saying whatever the fuck he wants. And some of his talking points are classic old school liberal thoughts. And some of them are classic, you know, racist psycho thoughts. And some are just whatever. But what he's doing is he's forcing every party to be themselves. And there's a great article that's way better articulated than I could by Frank Rich in New York Magazine. Look it up. It's from a month ago. But even the other day when he was like, Jeb Bush says his brother kept the country safe. He didn't keep us safe. You know, George Bush didn't keep us safe. We had 9/11. That is what the liberals, me, have been screaming since they tried to put that cap of bullshit on us. Like, he kept us safe. When? The day the terrorist attack happened? The day that Condoleezza Rice ignored the memo that said bin Laden determined to strike in U.S.? The day that all those guys that hijacked were on the terror watch list and we did shit about it? The day that we are in bed with the Saudis and all the hijackers were Saudi? Come on. Kept us safe. Stop the crap. I'm not saying if I was president, I could have prevented 9/11, but I wouldn't be like, see how safe I just kept you? What? It's Orwellian talk. So I like that he's saying that. He's not, and the people that are, you know, voted for Bush and said things like he kept us safe, some of them like Trump, and they have to be faced with that. A lot of people that toe the party line, that do what daddy says, now have to readjust their thinking because Trump is doing their thinking for them. And on some things like that, I think it's really important to rewrite our history with the truth and go, well, I mean, how safe did he keep us? And I think that whoever gets it done, great. I don't care if my team wins. I want the right information to be out there. And as much crap as he's spewing, there's still as much good stuff happening behind what he's saying and where he's exposing these other people. That's all I'm going to say. I don't think it's ever going to get to the point where he is close to becoming president. I think he's going to keep needling and noodling everybody until whoever is left, we end up maybe having kind of an honest election. In terms of, I don't know if the results will be honest, if someone will rig it, but I'm saying the campaigning perhaps will be a little more transparent. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe once Trump gets out of the way, everyone goes back to their bullshit. I don't know. You know, it'll be interesting if he has to endorse someone once he drops out. I don't know. I guess if he runs his third party, it could really fuck things up. But I think things need to be fucked up. Again, I do not support him. But I in no way think it's time for him to be out of the race. I think he's actually doing some, whether he intends to or not, some subversive shit to both sides. And Bernie Sanders, the fact that I feel like we so don't want to elect a woman. And I know people are like, no, I would. I just Hillary and no more Bushes, no more Clintons. But it's like every time a woman gets close, we're like, let's go with that other thing that scares us. Like black guy, we'll go black guy. And then it's like, socialist, we'll go socialist. Bernie Sanders, old man, crazy, screaming socialist. Like, anything to not elect a woman. And I love Bernie. I've always wanted a Bernie Sanders Kucinich presidency. And that's where, you know, half of you are turning off your tape recorders, wherever you listen to me in. But I told you, I'm liberal as a loon. But I got my own ideas and my own things. And those two guys come closest, but not even 100% close enough for me. Again, I don't really align with anybody. You know, I got to pick what represents me the best. But I in no way conform myself to look like who's representing me. Because then we all lose the battle when we do that. That's why I get annoyed with a lot of people who think they are free thinkers. I'm like, you sound just like your party. All right. And it's okay to sometimes not be a free thinker. Sometimes you don't know what to think. And you go, well, I trust these people. And they say that. I just hope everyone's open-minded enough to go, well, I came around on that, you know. Great story, Jen. Another recommended reading. There's an article in the New Yorker about a Syrian refugee who ended up in Sweden. It's so fucking riveting. I read it on a plane. I normally can't get through the New Yorker. It's sometimes a little boring. It is so good. It's about how he tried to leave so many times, how much money it costs. This whole thing of like the reason you have to sneak across is because if you get caught in any other parts, they'll stamp you and then you have to live there. So you want to be sure that you don't get caught in like whatever, Turkey, because you don't want to live there, but you want, it's riveting. And I don't know the name of the article. Great recommendation. But it's, if you type like Syrian refugee New Yorker, you'll find it. Okay. So, oh God, there was so much more to get to, but that's because I have like backlogged ideas forever. This wasn't even funny. I know I say that all the time and I'm like on to myself. I know that that's my little shtick, but seriously, this one, who cares? So here's some, here's another thing. I believe we are going to have mugs that say rich bitch coming soon. There's also going to be, I think, an I Seem Fun special holiday poster that you can decorate your dorm, apartment, office with. Hopefully those are going to be ready soon. I'll let you know. The greatest way to support me and this podcast is A, by listening, because that helps me get advertisers. And again, thank you to everyone at Casper Mattress for letting me do this episode today. Oh, you know what? I was going to do the Casper ad. No, I'll do it at the beginning. So anyway, what was my point? What was my damn point? Oh, the best way to support this podcast, because you are supporting independent business owners like Estoy Merchandise, and you are supporting me, which supports all things comedy, is buy the merch. Go get yourself a poster, an I Seem Fun shirt. When these rich bitch things come out in the poster, that's the greatest way. The money gets to us quickly and easily. And if you're like, well, what's the damn website? First of all, you can go to jenkirkman.com and you can click, I believe there's a merch page button. I actually don't even know. Let me go to my own website. Yeah, go to jenkirkman.com, click merch. And I never advertise my albums either because I hate them, because I recorded them, one of them 10 years ago and the other one 5 years ago. So I'm not even the same person, let alone comedian. But if you want to, if you're a archival kind of person or a completist or whatever they call it, get them. Self-help and Hail to the Freaks. It's all on my website, jenkirkman.com/merch. But if you go to buy I Seem Fun t-shirts, you go to Estoy Merchandise. It's Estoy Merchandise.com. And then you click my name, Jen Kirkman. And you get Fuck the Haters mug, and I Seem Fun mug, and I Seem Fun poster, different t-shirts. We still have the I'm Gonna Die Alone and I Feel Fine t-shirts. So just get on there. Do some shopping. All right. Well, I think there was another thing I wanted to just say really quick. I shouldn't have talked for an hour. I said to myself that I wasn't going to, but I just had so much fun talking to you guys. Oh, I didn't tell you about the guy that pretended he didn't speak English on my plane. All right. I was speaking at the New Yorker. Some woman from the New Yorker tweeted, how did Jen Kirkman go in a pool on Drunk History? I thought they were mic'd up. It's like, honey, I want to believe in the spontaneity of Drunk History. It's like, sweetie, You think it's a live thing that's happening? Like, you think it's all one shot, like Birdman, and there's no editing? Like, I took the mic off, and then we jumped in the pool. Like, obviously, we had to walk from the... If you guys saw my latest drunk history about journalism, I jump in a pool at the end. First of all, that's not my home. I was horrified that people thought it was. It's some, like, older woman's home in Miami Beach. I had to film that in Miami. It's a long story, but Derek from Drunk History had to be in Miami for something, and he last minute... I had retired from Drunk History. I was not supposed to be in this season. And then someone dropped out or something, and he was like, I know you said you're retired, but we do one more. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, but I'm in New York. I'm writing a book. I'm not flying back to LA. He's like, you're not? I'm like, nope, I won't do it. And he's like, well, I have to be in Miami with the crew from Drunk History for something else. So could you come then? I'm like, all right, I'll fly to Miami because that's still on the East Coast. It's not too long of a flight. So I fly to Miami and we film it in some lady's house and I do the Drunk History. And the whole time, now I'm super wasted and I don't remember much. You know how I get when I do the Drunk Histories. And I remember threatening I'm going to jump in the pool. And then I blacked out or something. So I think I'm talking. I'm going to jump in the pool. I'm going to jump in the pool. And I think they were preparing for that. I think they, as I was talking, I think one cameraman went outside. They probably turned the lights on and got a boom mic ready. Or there's a boom mic over me the whole time. I remember walking to the pool and taking my mic off. And then I wasn't sure if I was going to jump in, but I didn't know I was going to push Derek in. That was not planned. So, and I didn't even know they were going to use any of that. Like, honestly, didn't. I was like in and out of consciousness. I probably shouldn't have jumped in a pool, but... Anyway, so take it easy, the New Yorker, with the stupid tweets. How did they do that? What? All right. This is enough talking, for Christ's sake. Until next week, have fun.